Klein and Judge McCullough and I are here, so I believe we have everyone we're expecting. So, Mr. Peter, are you ready to roll?
Yes, sir, as I'll ever be.
Do you wish to reserve any time for rebuttal?
I'll reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Yes, sir. You're free to proceed whenever you're ready.
Well, thank you, Judge. I just had a couple of housekeeping matters to attend to first. I appreciate, number one, you all being flexible and letting us do this over the telephone. It's a great help to us. But getting straight to the argument that I had planned for today, I don't really have that much to add outside of the brief and outside of what the public defender argued in the appendix. Simply, our case is that we feel that that our client should have been allowed to withdraw his guilty plea. We felt that he did it in good faith, number one, satisfying the first prong of the Paris test, and secondly, that he had a substantive defense satisfying the second prong of it. And
if I may, though, inquire about that second prong, and this is Judge Huff, isn't that the weak spot, whether this really was a viable defense that was available to him, saying that someone else said that he could go through this? To get a second loan doesn't make that a defense, does it?
Well, it certainly makes it one person's word against another, but I mean, I don't think it's as strong as, say, the defense that they had in the Bottoms case. But I don't know. I think that's sort of a situation where a trial would be warranted so that that can be taken into consideration. The other thing that we had to say too as well, we also felt that perhaps Judge Yates did not use the proper analysis in the appendix when he said that that he didn't think that there was anything here, that he didn't think that he was going to allow him to withdraw his plea. I mean, my understanding of the case law, and I think that announced in the Hubbard case, the judge basically said it was, and said correctly, that it was within his purview or within his discretion to allow someone to withdraw a guilty plea or disallow it. But he didn't go through the analysis called for in the Paris case, not that I've been able to pick up from the appendix. I mean, he didn't say anything about good faith, in my opinion, and the second thing is he really didn't do the analysis that we just talked about on the substantive defense. He didn't mention anything about it. I think he just essentially said that it was within his purview to allow it or disallow it. Now, I know this judge pretty well. I'm no doubt in my mind that it was on his mind when he said these things, that he was thinking about the analysis, but for purposes of making the record, that was not, according to what I read out of the transcripts, not put into the record. And I think that's really all I've got to add today. Like I said, I'm going to rely on my brief and rely on the argument made by the public defender in the appendix. I mean, I'll be happy to do the best that I can with any questions that you may have.
I have none.
Okay. All right. I thought the briefs were thorough and laid everything out, so I don't have any questions.
All right. Sounds like there are no questions at this time, so is that it for now then, Mr. Peter?
I don't have anything more, Judge. I've followed my notes, and I don't think I've got anything else. It's a pretty well-explored area of law.
Yes, it certainly is that. Well, then, let's hear from Ms. Darren.
Your Honor, getting to the question that was asked about the second prong, if the trial court didn't adequately cover that prong, it's clear that there was no such claim raised in the trial court to that effect to bring the court's attention to that issue, and so. if that is something that council is attempting to raise now, it would be for the first time on appeal, and we'd ask the court not to consider that under 5A18. But going backwards, if you look at the trial court, the trial court's analysis, starting on page 57, it is the Commonwealth's position that the court did find that the defendant did not have a substantive or reasonable basis for contesting guilt. It is difficult from the proffer that the defendant made to design how he receiving information from someone led to his lack of intent to defraud. But the court found, as a matter of fact, that the facts, first of all, that the facts proffered by the Commonwealth at the guilty plea hearing on page 57 were sufficient to find the defendant guilty. And then the argument sort of bled into the sentencing hearing, because that is when the defendant raised his motion to withdraw. And the court found that the defendant, you know, had been previously convicted of multiple similar felonies, moral turpitude felonies. They were the same or the similar larceny by false pretenses offense. The court found he was familiar with the criminal justice system, and the court found that the defendant knew what he was doing when he obtained the second title loan by false pretenses. And I point the court to pages 65 through 66 of the record for that. I would just simply say that I've got about 16 cases on this pre-sentencing motion to withdraw a guilty plea issue, and there are only three cases, Bottoms in the Supreme Court being the most recent, and that was a construction fraud case which I handled, and there were many difficulties with that case, including that there was no evidence to show that the defendant had the intent to defraud at the time he got his money. But the other cases, Paris, had to do with a guilty plea to a seduction offense, and the defendant thought his subsequent marriage would void the prosecution. And then the justice case was a situation where the defendant couldn't have been found guilty of the charged offense of breaking and entering and related crimes because she lived in the dwelling. So if you compare the evidence in this case with the 16 cases that I've pulled, 16 or so cases, some unpublished, that I've pulled, and compare it to those three cases where there has been error found by the court, I think this case clearly falls within the trial court not abusing its discretion in denying the defendant's motion. And I'll be glad to answer questions.
I have one. This is Judge Huff.
Yes, sir.
Is there a question about whether or not the motion was made in good faith? That is to say, is the first prong satisfied?
No, Your Honor. We've argued that the first prong is also not satisfied because the defendant, again, and that prong is really, really boils down to an issue of credibility, which we've set out in our brief and relied on. I can't find the case right this moment, but we have cited it in our brief that boiled down to a matter of credibility, and the defendant testified, that he moved to withdraw the plea under an honest mistake of material fact, and he testified that when he had just been released from a mental health facility the day before the guilty plea hearing, that he was taking medication that has affected his ability to make decisions, and his attorney told him not to tell the court about this, and that's at pages 36 and 50 of the appendix. And he also indicated that his attorney guaranteed that the defendant wouldn't receive any active time, and that he first learned he was facing active time when he received the sentencing guidelines as part of the pre-sentence report. And that's on pages 2060, 27, and 50 of the transcript record. But again, like the defendant in the Pritchard case, the trial court didn't believe the defendant's testimony. And the trial court's finding as to the defendant's credibility on his subsequent statements when weighed against his prior statements during the guilty plea colloquy and deciding that the defendant was not credible is a discretionary matter, as with any credibility of a witness issue for a fact finder, and it's not to be disturbed unless plainly wrong. And the case is Jones v. Commonwealth, 29 Virginia App, 503. It's cited in our brief, and it is a case dealing with the withdrawal of a guilty plea. So the court did find that there was no good faith basis for moving to withdraw the plea based on, and he based his decisions on his statements made at the guilty plea. And I think the court was really spot on when he said, this court had earlier said it in Pritchard, when the trial court said if the defendant could come in and say, I want to withdraw my guilty plea because the sentencing guidelines aren't coming out the way I thought, or the way I thought they'd come out, or the way I was told they would come out, or a defendant were entitled to withdraw the plea because he says that his lawyer told him something different than what he represented to the court during the plea colloquy, then the whole colloquy pursuant to 3A:8 and Form 6 in the rules of court would be rendered a nullity. So for that reason as well, we would say that the defendant has not satisfied that first prong either. For these reasons, we'd ask the court to affirm the trial court's judgment.
Very well. Mr. Peter, any rebuttal?
Well, first of all, Judge, I should remind the court, I did not handle this case at the trial level, and I didn't do the motion to withdraw the guilty plea. There's been two other lawyers, so I can't offer the court any sort of boots on the ground intelligence as far as what was said and the basis of why certain decisions were made. I can say this about my client. I mean, I would be inclined to agree with the Attorney General on the fact that the first part of the prong, I think what is contemplated there is the good faith thing addresses facts material to the case. But my client, I think, would disagree, and he would say that the circumstances under which he took the plea were not quite as he had thought, and he was going on some bad information, and I think based on that, that's the reason why he definitely wanted to withdraw his guilty plea.
Anything further?
I don't have anything else.
All right. Well, the case stands submitted then, and you will be hearing from us shortly. Thank you very much to you both.
Thank you, Judge.
Thank you, Your Honor. Have a good afternoon.
Have a good afternoon.